This is The Big Breakdown, a long look back at some of the biggest stories we're covering for you at the Hidden Killers Podcast and True Crime Today. This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Drake.
Want to go to another area here. The prosecution is still presenting its case against Lindsay Clancy, but after 3 weeks in Plymouth Superior Court, the jury has watched a mother break down, heard her diary entries read aloud, and sat through autopsy testimony about three children. Criminal defense attorney Bob Mata and host of the podcast Defense Diaries is with us from Boston. He's been in the courtroom all week watching this. The prosecution is getting close to wrapping up. We know that. Reddington's going to have his chance to present his side of the case. He's been doing a fabulous job on cross so far, I think, of presenting it. But Bob, in your opinion, what does he still need to educate the jury on that maybe there's some holes that are missing? There's a lot of education, it feels, that needs to be done in this case. Just watching our comment section, watching people's reaction, there's either an understanding of this or almost a willingness to not understand this, almost an intention of not trying to understand this at a deeper level. I got to imagine there's some jurors in that box that may be in that same sort of mindset. Where does he need to go when the stage is his?
All right. So, Todd, do me a favor. 1125 Gorgoruga. It's a mouthful.
It's also a new cheese. I'm having it on my salad this afternoon. It's delicious. Little nutty.
This comment perfectly encapsulates what the issue is for Kevin Reddington. Okay. Because yeah. This is no, I'm not making
a. It's not a disparagement.
It's really not a disparagement. I'm not making any kind of character judgment on Gorg. She needs to be locked up for life, protect other kids, regardless of the factors which led to the triple murder. Now, you are not alone, Gorg. there are many, 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 many people out there that feel that exact. That is the challenge that Kevin Reddington is faced with. For the Gorgs that are on the jury who are coming into this with, I don't care what caused her to do it, she did it. Mm-hmm. And nothing that you're going to say to me, and nothing that an expert or some talking head that's going to be on the stand that's been paid by the defense is going to convince me that she doesn't need to be punished. Because this, and so it's the exact reason why lawyers call the insanity defense, and in Massachusetts they call it lack of criminal responsibility. It's the defense of last resort. And it's because we as Americans have an incredibly difficult time uttering those words, because people cannot focus on anything other than the act. Now, Gorg, if you were on the jury and you were to maintain your mindset, even though the Commonwealth doesn't meet their burden and they're not going to be able to, because what's going to happen is when the Commonwealth rests, I believe, on Monday, people are going to be like, well, where's the case? Well, that's not the case. The defense would have stipulated to all of that. There is no question. And I see the Patrick Clancy bullshit in the chat. That didn't happen. I'm telling you. Trust Lindsay's lawyer. Kevin Reddington's been doing it 50 years. The guy's a legend. Yeah. It's like watching Matlock in the courtroom, except a real life version of it. If you don't think that he thought about being able to point the finger at Patrick, you're out of your mind. Nothing slips by that guy. It doesn't exist in the world as a real thing. Yeah. His client did it. So that's what we have to contend with. And all the focus on the Patrick shit is taking the focus away from what needs to be happening on this trial, which is the mental health care system, the health care system, postpartum depression, postpartum psychosis. Postpartum depression is not even in the DMV or the DSM.
DSM.
DSM. You know, that's stunning to me. You know what I'm saying? So. Yeah. That challenge of being able to get people to understand that if somebody's lost control of their mind to the extent where they have no ability to talk themselves out of what's happening, because what's happening in their mind is their new reality. It's literally a different person within the vessel, which is the body. Intellectually, the mind has become something else. And to get people to the point where they're willing to say, all right, I understand what happened here, and I'm willing to apply the law, because that's where I was getting to, Gorg. It would be nullification. You'd be refusing to follow the law. So if the Commonwealth doesn't meet their burden by proving that she's not psychotic, and you're saying, I don't give a shit, I'm convicting her because of what she did, and I don't care what the circumstances are, that is in effect jury nullification, wherein it's usually for the defendant, in the defendant's favor, like in a case like Aaron Spencer. Like, you know, he's protecting his 13-year-old daughter. He puts down a 67-year-old monster who has been abusing her and grooming her. And does it again after he gets out of jail and he's got her, whatever, all that whole situation. And he goes and puts them down. If the state would have met their burden, and the entire jury is like, I am not convicting that man who saved his daughter, even though the law required him to do it. That's called jury nullification. It's where you're refusing to apply the law. And that's the problem with this case. That is Kevin Reddington's biggest hurdle, is getting people to actually buy into the law that has been written by the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, and it exists for a reason in terms of lack of criminal responsibility, to get people to say, all right, as much as I don't want to, I'm going to apply the damn law.
And she's not walking. And that's what people can't get over. She is, no matter what, she's not walking away from this free if she's found innocent of not being criminally responsible for it. She will be, I mean, if not forever for life, she's going to be at a state psychotic institution, you know, psychiatric institution for life. There's no getting away.
It really feels to me, and it's kind of an observation I've made in a bit of a judgment as well, the same group of folks who seem to have a willingness to not understand this, like going out of their way to not critically think about it because it's icky and it's uncomfortable, are the same group that would be going to their Alzheimer patient grandmother or parent and going, why don't you remember? Come on, you're being so forgetful. And that exists. I've seen it. Where it's like, they have Alzheimer's. They have dementia.
We talked about this three weeks ago. This exact thing.
And it's like, the sad thing is, there's a lot of people that still operate in that world. And then they're shocked when grandma or mom or dad is not operating like they were 30, 40 years ago. Their brain is damaged. Their brain is broken. It's a different type of broken than this psychosis, but it's in kind of that sort of family, if you will, where the vessel is there, they are not. And it's an easier way to help understand it. And I was trying to think of ways of making an analogy to help understand it. But then I thought, well, these are the same folks who would do that sort of shit to their ailing grandparents or parents who are thinking this sort of way. I don't know why this is such a hard hurdle for people to grasp and understand. It's uncomfortable. It's sad, without a doubt.
No one's saying go free. No one is saying she's going free or wants to go free.
Yeah. She came up in that Braben's comment 11:27. I know that the CW are trying to prove. No, the next 11:27 a.m. The one I know that the CW are trying to prove she wasn't in psychosis. That one, you see it? I'll read. Yeah, that one. All right. So after Tony's impassioned plea about in our last segment, which I think Annette was in here, that's what Kevin Reddington's dealing with, man. Like when Tony was trying to explain in our last segment, which everybody should go back and watch, that the providers that are getting on the stand saying that she wasn't showing any of the symptoms of psychosis is because she wasn't in psychosis yet.
Yeah.
It wasn't until after that. So that's not where they're proving it anyway, Annette. So you have to wait for the defense to come on. Their experts are going to explain to the world. Hopefully people are listening. what psychosis actually is, that you can actually, it waxes and wanes. You can you can have periods of lucidity. You can operate a phone. You can have
just
a conversation.
Google it. Just Google it.
Right. I mean, you can make plans.
Yeah.
All these things can happen while you're in psychosis.
She's a witch.
I mean,
it's essentially people are calling her a witch without calling her a witch. It's
like, ironically, I'm in the bastion of, you know, I'm stone's throw from Salem.
Yeah.
it's where it all happened.
There's the weekend plans, Bob. Go visit Salem and take some pictures
and
with
also,
the witches.
This isn't, I mean, if you followed our show for the last 4 years, we've never, ever said this fit. So this is a blurb for us as well. I've never seen a case like this. I mean, Bob's seen many more, obviously. But, I mean, this is the first time we're saying we have a massive incongruence. It must be a different explanation. And so, and all these crazy nutters. Because, and that's another point of this is, like, everyone has mental health issues that does horrendous things to human beings. All of them. But none of them we've ever covered is a psychotic break. You know, even the Nick Reiner, he ain't going to reach that bar. It wasn't. That's a life pattern of broken brain. This is a wholly different matter.
But I know you got to run, Bob, here quickly before you run. And I want to ask you this. And we're not quite here yet, but I'm curious to get your take on it. We're going to get to this to the jury in a matter of weeks, maybe by the end of next. Do you think we're going to get to a verdict, though?
No.
That's not a hung jury.
No. I think they'll try her again, and I don't think we'll get to it again. This is a case that people are so absolutely set in their ways. Their mindset is not going to be changed. The Annettes, the Gorgs, those folks, it doesn't matter what Reddington's going to put on. Because, again, there's the folks that are this one segment that are like, I don't care. Yeah, I'll admit she was psychotic. She was in psychosis. I'll give that to you. Tough shit.
Yeah.
She killed her kids. She's going in. That's it. Throw away the key. I don't care.
Yeah.
You'll have the other folks that are a little more torn, and then you'll have the folks on the opposite side that understand that mental illness is a real thing and that this woman didn't have control of her faculties and that it's the only reasonable explanation. When you look at who she was as a mother, there's no other explanation on the planet that exists other than she was in psychosis. If they had any kind of proof that Patrick Clancy was having an affair with another woman and Lindsay found out and this was her fucking response, it would have been exhibit 1A.
Yeah.
And it would have been their entire opening. This woman snapped when she found out that her husband was having an affair. It doesn't exist in evidence. So the only explanation that is at all reasonable in terms of trying to figure out what happened here is the woman was in psychosis. That woman who loved those kids the way that she did, and when you hear her journal entries, you know this is a woman who was invested in being a mother, who loved those kids with everything in her every fiber of her being. And to do this, something had gone horribly wrong in her mind. And that's it. And we're never going to – I'll be shocked if we get a verdict. Let me put it that way.
I'd be shocked – if we make it to a second trial, not because the Commonwealth isn't going to retry her, because you know they will, I will be shocked if she's alive for it. If we get a hung jury here, I don't want her to be retried. I'd be shocked if she doesn't find her own exit, take an ramp at some point. Honestly,
Reddington was very honest about it before the trial started. You know, he said it. It's like, look, she's still suicidal.
Yeah.
You know,
I don't know how you wouldn't be for the rest of your existence.
There's never going to be a day, in her entirety of her life that she doesn't want to not be here anymore.
Yeah. And I
got to roll.
Enjoy Boston. Say hi to Fraser for us.
I love you,
Bob. Good job, Bob. Thanks, Bob.
All right. See you guys.
All right. We'll continue our conversation here for another 20 or so minutes. We'll talk about what's going on with the case and the Patrick end of things, because that still seems to be a road that a lot of folks like to travel down. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube on that. Links are in the description.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast. This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
Every woman listening or watching this has heard some version of this sentence. Maybe it was aimed at her. Maybe she watched it land on someone she loves. You have three healthy kids. What could possibly be wrong? Or insert something here. Well, you have this. What could possibly be wrong? Lindsay Clancy knew what was wrong. She couldn't feel anything. Not sadness, not joy, not the connection. She was so desperately wanting to feel when she held her 8-month-old son. She described it as numbness, and she knew it wasn't right. She knew something was wrong. A fog so thick she couldn't make a plan, couldn't carry one out, couldn't shut her own mind off long enough to sleep. She wrote in her journal that her brain wouldn't stop cycling through what someone needed from her next. She wrote that she was drowning. She wasn't hiding any of this. She told her husband. She told her mother. She told her friend, A.B. Bevins, that medication was giving her dark thoughts. She messaged her providers and went to emergency rooms. She checked herself into a locked psychiatric ward on New Year's Eve. She did everything the system tells a new mother to do when something is wrong. So if you're sitting here looking for the evidence of what she was planning, she was trying to get better. Her plan was to get better. That's what she was planning. There's all the evidence that points to her planning to try and get better by going to medical professionals to help her get there. She planned it. She planned to get better. And she tried and asked and took every possible route she could take to get there. By January 23, she'd been prescribed 13 psychiatric medications in 4 months by at least 5 different providers. As we've been learning in court, the number gets closer to 30. She was still getting worse. She was so convinced something was fundamentally broken inside her that she searched online for whether she was a psychopath. Nobody had given her a name for what was happening. The numbness was the only thing that she could point to. Here's what the world looks like when you've just had a baby in America. People bring food. They ask how the baby's sleeping. They tell you to enjoy every minute because it goes by so fast. Your phone fills up with golden hour photos from other mothers in matching outfits and date night selfies at 6 weeks postpartum. Captions about how hard it is, but worth it. The message comes from everywhere, and it never stops. This is supposed to be the best time of your life. Lindsay Clancy had 3 children under 5, born between 2017 and May of 22. She'd been a labor and delivery nurse who spent her career helping other mothers through the hardest moments of theirs. She'd had postpartum anxiety after her first child and again after her second. Both times she managed it with exercise, meditation, therapy. She knew what postpartum struggles felt like from both sides of the hospital bed. After Callan, what showed up was different. The anxiety was worse. The sleep disappeared entirely. And then something new arrives that she couldn't name. A disconnection from her own life that went beyond sadness or baby blues. She tried to describe it in her journal. She wrote about stopping breastfeeding for her mental health. She felt devastated by the decision, guilt that Callan preferred breast milk, guilty that she'd made a medical choice and it still felt like failure. She tried sleep training him and listened to him cry for over an hour without going in because the doctors told it was the right thing to do. She wrote, hearing him cry for one plus hours is not, and not intervening just about killed me. In the same entry, I even said the words, I want to die, to Pat. That's not a woman who's unhappy about having a baby. That's a woman whose illness was feeding on every normal decision motherhood asked her to make. The guilt wasn't about parenting choices. It was the illness consumed as, it was what the illness consumed as fuel. The numbness scared her more than the guilt. She told providers she felt completely hopeless. She journaled about brain fog so dense she couldn't think past the next nap time. I have crazy brain fog, she wrote. I feel like I can't make a plan. I can't carry it out. And another entry, I'm so desperate to get a mental break from taking care of everyone that my mind is trying to make something physically wrong with me. Her journal kept circling the same confession. My mind never shuts off. It's constantly thinking of the next thing someone needs. I can't shut it off. Those entries were written by a woman documenting her own collapse in real time. She knew something was breaking. She just couldn't get anyone to treat it as the emergency it was. So they gave her pills. In mid-October 22, her OB started her on Zoloft, didn't help. Same month, Ativan for anxiety and Benadryl for sleep. In November, she went to the South Shore ER and came home with Trazodone, didn't help either. Then she started seeing a nurse practitioner, Julie Paul. In 4 days, Paul prescribed her new medication on top of what she was already taking, Prozac, Ambien, Remeron, and Klonopin. By late November, she'd switched to another NP, Rebecca Jolotta. Jolotta started her on Seroquel, an antipsychotic, and kept raising the dose to 400 milligrams a day, then Valium, then Lamictal, a mood stabilizer, 13 prescriptions across 4 months, and 5 prescribers, none of them had a full picture of what she was taking because none was communicating with the other. In early December, Lindsay messaged Jolotta. She said she really needs help, would try anything. It was having intrusive thoughts I never had before. Jolotta testified in court that she told Lindsay intrusive thoughts are quite common in women with postpartum depression and anxiety. She adjusted the medications again. Lindsay told her she was afraid the drugs were making things worse. She worried she was becoming dependent on benzodiazepines. Jolotta testified she didn't believe dependence was a concern at the time. Patrick watched it happen. He told friends the medications weren't working, and she'd had the worst side effects possible. Her defense attorney later told the court the prescriptions had turned her into a zombie. Patrick testified it wasn't about getting off medication. It was about finding the right one, and nobody could find it. On December 15th, Patrick and Lindsay called Jolotta and told her it had been the worst day. Lindsay was having persistent thoughts of taking her own life. Jolotta told them to consider a higher level of care. Lindsay went to Women and Infants Hospital in Rhode Island, a facility with a specialty postpartum program, according to defense attorney Kevin Reddington. The program wouldn't accept her. Their concern, he said in court, was that she'd been over-medicated. Their assessment, according to trial testimony, depression due to adverse drug effects. A doctor at Women and Infants tried to reach Jolotta to discuss Lindsay's medications, and according to the defense, that call was never returned. The only facility that looked at the full picture and said the drugs might be the problem couldn't get the prescribing provider on the phone. Lindsay checked herself into McLean Hospital on New Year's Eve with S thoughts. She texted Patrick from inside, I don't belong here. She was discharged 5 days later. 2 days after that, she and Patrick threw Cora's 5th birthday party at a trampoline park. Patrick testified he felt hope. He said he thought Lindsay felt it too. She didn't. In the days before January 24th, according to her civil lawsuit, Lindsay went online and searched for whether she was a psychopath. She wasn't looking up evidence. She was looking up numbness. 4 months of begging for help had delivered her into a search engine instead of a diagnosis. 13 medications and 5 prescribers. And the only conclusion she could reach on her own was that something was broken in her at a level medicine couldn't touch. Patrick Clancy testified that the day that the three children died was actually one of her best days prior to that. Lindsay took Cora to the pediatrician that morning. The kids built a snowman in the backyard and sent Patrick photos. They texted each other pictures of the children doing crafts, laughing. Prosecutors showed the jury images from family outings that month. That's the detail that should haunt every person listening to this. It proves she wasn't fine. And nobody around her could see it. Or understand this. Because everybody keeps going to psychosis and, well, none of the doctors saw it. Yeah, because it wasn't present at the time. She fell into a state of psychosis when the event happened. That's how psychosis works. Well, she's a psychopath, right? No, that's not the same thing at all. Psychopath is who someone is. It's their disorder. It's their makeup. It's their standing order. It's who they always are. No one is arguing and saying that she is that. They're saying that she fell into a state of psychosis, which, guess what? You, me, anybody can fall into in the right setting. When our chemicals aren't working right, when our biology isn't working right, when we get medicated, say maybe, I don't know, 30 different drugs that are designed to affect how your brain works in the course of 3 months, on and off, all the time. One hand not knowing what the other one's doing, one doctor not communicating with the other. That could get you there pretty easily. After seeing those list of medications and what she was going on and off and when she was being prescribed and taken off of without proper time to do these sort of things. I challenge anyone not to be easily falling into a state of psychosis. And behind all of those medications is the actual problem, her actual disorder, the actual thing that was ailing her, which could get her there without the help of the meds. I feel like some of this trial is people not wanting to admit they don't understand shit. Because I can guarantee there's several people right now going, oh, a psychopath and someone falling into psychosis are two different things? Yes, they are. You know what? I didn't know that a few years ago either. So it's okay to say, I didn't know that. That might change the way I'm thinking about this whole thing. Yeah, it might. Information's good. Learning things is good. Educating yourself, understanding concepts maybe you're not that familiar with, haven't understood, haven't had an opportunity to understand, and growing as a human being to understand them better is a good thing. Why? Because you don't know what's going to be going on in your life in the future. And you don't know when maybe understanding some of these things might come in handy. It might help you if something happens to someone you care about or yourself to not just write them off as a witch or they're evil. But the three kids. Yeah, no one's arguing how horrific any of that is. We're arguing how horrific it is that people refuse to understand mental health and allow this sort of environment to continue to thrive. And by thrive, I mean not helping people who need the help and recognizing it the way it needs to be recognized, and one doctor communicating with the other, everybody sitting there going, she's evil, just get rid of her. That does nothing to fix this environment, which produced this result. I know, two thoughts. She wants to be away for the rest of her life, locked away in a mental health facility. Good. Let her. Well, she's a danger. Yeah, sure. No one's arguing that. No one's saying, like, let's go set her free. She's not even wanting that. We're arguing the system was so broken, and when someone begged for help, 500 ways to Tuesday, it still dramatically failed her. Well, you can't rely on institutions. Well, then I guess we just shouldn't have doctors' offices in general then, right? If we can't rely on experts, medical experts, to do their job effectively, then why do we even fucking have them? If we're going to keep throwing everything back on the patient, she should have known this, she should have done that. Well, okay, great. Then you start telling your doctor what they should do with you. And don't yield to their expertise. Plenty of people already do that. Experts who've testified at trial describe postpartum psychosis as having a waxing and waning course. A woman can look functional, present, even happy, and be in active crisis underneath. The symptoms don't announce themselves. They look like a mother building a snowman with her kids. That evening, according to her defense, a voice came. The same aggressive male voice her civil lawsuit alleges she'd been hearing since she started Seroquel. According to her attorney, it said, "This is your last chance. Kill the children so you can kill yourself." That was psychosis. Everything before it was something else entirely. The 4 months, the 13 medications, the guilt, the numbness, the journal entries, the providers who had heard intrusive thoughts and called them common. All of that was a woman trying to say she was grounding in a language that people around her didn't know how to hear. She searched for whether she was a psychopath. That's where the medication carousel and the misdiagnosis delivered her. Not to an answer, not to a treatment that worked. To a woman alone in her phone trying to figure out if she was fundamentally broken as a person. Nobody who was supposed to help her could explain the numbness. She wrote to a provider that she was willing to try anything. She told Patrick it had been the worst day. She went to the emergency rooms, admitted herself to a locked ward, journaled about wanting to die. She begged for help. The answer she got was that she was experiencing things that were quite common. Her journal held the only thing she ever wanted. "I desperately want to go back to work, but now I don't know how I'm going to function." She wanted to feel like a nurse again, to be a mother who could build a snowman and actually be present for it. Or after all of that, as the internet likes to say, she was plotting and planning and wanted to escape her life because she didn't want her kids anymore or her husband, even though all of the evidence points to 1,000% the opposite. If you want to keep believing that shit, that's on you. And that says a lot more about you and your cognitive ability of reasoning and understanding reality than it does about Lindsay Clancy. I would suggest help. Because here's the evidence. And it ain't what you're saying it is over there. It's just not. That may be what you want to believe it is to explain that type of behavior. But here's what the evidence actually is and the behavior that followed. It would be a lot easier to understand this case if she was that. If she was this evil, plotting, hating her children, wanting to escape everything and have nothing to do with her family, has another life ready on this side. We've seen that in cases. That does exist. This is not that. Those people are easy to spot. They're easy to convict. And they're easy to want to eviscerate. They're easy to eviscerate. You know why I'm not doing this, that in this case about this woman, which I do to so many cases, is because she's not that. Because this person, this Lindsay Clancy person, who's a real human being, as is Patrick, who everybody likes to make their new punching bag with bizarre theories, who lost his three children and essentially his wife and his life, but found love and should be scorned for that. These are real people and these are real problems. And we talk about them. The reason I'm not going down the road of ripping her apart is because this could happen to you. This could happen to me. This could happen to your daughter. This could happen to your sister. This could happen to your neighbor. This could happen to anyone. Falling into a state of psychosis. I'm not saying it could happen that you're, or likely at all, that you're going to go do this to your children. But people do fall into states of psychosis. It doesn't make them a psychopath. People can fall into those states, and they can do horrible things, regretful things, things they don't know about or remember, because the vessel that's their body is just that. Their mind ain't working. It ain't the person you know and love. And if you don't want to accept that, you want to pretend that doesn't exist, well, that's on you. But I would bet the person in your world who, God forbid, they fall into that state for whatever reason they get there, would sure love it if you took a moment to try and understand how a brain gets there. And you don't just turn their back, your back on them and go, you're evil, you're horrible, it's a devil, it's a witch, it's, you wanted to, I mean, again, there's people that have all of that and more coming to them. And there's cases, a lot of cases like this, where it is a mental health crisis. And this is a case where this woman did everything she could begging help. And if you can't see that, I don't know. I have serious questions. Serious, serious questions. She wanted to feel like a nurse again, to be a mother who could build a snowman and actually be present for it. Cora was 5, Dawson was 3, Callan was 8 months old. Their mother spent 4 months telling everyone around her that she was disappearing. She wrote it down and she said it out loud and she went where they told her to go. The distance between that Lindsay Clancy was living and what the people around her were willing to hear is the space between where 3 children died. The unwillingness to hear. That's how this happened. That's why this is so rageful. So everybody's screaming, what about the kids? Yeah, what about the kids? And your unwillingness to understand how that woman got there. That's not protecting any of the other kids that are still alive. Your thoughts in the comments section on Substack and YouTube. Love for you to weigh in. If you want access to the trial audio, we're giving it to you every single day on our podcast feed, the audio of it, so you can listen in the car, at work, your walk, your gym, whatever you're doing. Check out the podcast right there. There's the right there. There we go. There's the link. The QR code is up in the corner if you're watching us on YouTube. Or just search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi wherever you get podcasts and press subscribe. All right, we'll continue our conversation in the comments section. Until then, my name is Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.